collar turned up, back straight, chest stuck out. He glided into the arena as if he owned the place. Words there from Roy Keane, talking about the subject of this episode of Retro Devils. I'm John, and today I'm joined by my friend Andre to discuss my first footballing hero, the one and only Eric Cantona. Just a slight warning before we get into the episode, there are a couple of mild swear words in here, just in case you don't like that kind of thing, or you happen to be listening with kids or whatever. So just a little warning of that. Welcome to Retro Devils. I am joined today by Andre. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and kind of how you first got into United and all of that good stuff?
Yeah, well, I'm French. I'm southwest of France, a place where rugby is kind of more popular than football. I wasn't that much into football when I was a kid. I mostly followed the French national team by then. And by 93, when I was 10, I followed Marseille winning the first and only French Champions League. So I got interested by that at the time. And following French national team at that time, Cantona was starting to play for the French national team, and he played well. He had a great partnership with Jean-Pierre Papin. They were quite complementary, one from the other. But it didn't. Well, they didn't fulfill the potential they had, I think. But well, so I started to get interested in Cantona at that time. Also, with the French media treatment of his antics, I think we will talk about that later, but I was intrigued by that character. Who was that guy? And then he left for England, and I have to say, I could only follow from afar. At that time, there weren't many English games on TV. I didn't have cable TV. I could only watch TV on French public television. So those were the French national teams, French national games. And he joined United. So for me, United became Cantona's team. So I can say I was properly a United fan back by then, but I got interested in United. I followed from afar his goals when they were on French football TV shows, and followed, of course, the Kung Fu Kick. I met him by then.
Oh, cool.
We'll probably talk about that also. Yeah. Well, it was very short, but yeah. And then he retired. And at that time, I can only say that I had a soft spot for United. And as I said, on French TV, we could only watch Champions League games. In 99, I don't know why, French TV showed nearly every United game. Maybe because United had that year got one of the hardest streak of games. So I got to watch barely every United game that Champions League run, and I fell in love. I got hooked up with the quality of the games, the quality of the team, the never say die attitude. Back then, as a teen, I was kinda had low self-esteem. I wasn't very. I didn't have much hope for the future, things like that. Watching United play with that attitude, that never say die attitude, and always fighting till the end and winning it in the end, and that resonated strongly with the teenager I was back then. And that was the team for me. And as an adult and student, I went to a big city, Toulouse, where there are many British people working there because of Airbus. Mm-hmm. So a town with many pubs, And so I realized that with these pubs, I had the chance to watch United games twice a week on the telly. So since then,
perfect.
Around circa 2003, I got to watch every United game since then. Yeah. And you? What about you?
Perfect. So yeah, I first got into United through my dad. Obviously, I'm from Shetland Islands, about 200 miles, 300 kilometres off the north of Scotland, so a little rock in the middle of the sea. But my dad is from Manchester originally, and he came up here to originally to work in the oil industry in the 70s. He was, I suppose, the one who kind of got me into United really as a child. The first game I remember watching, I think it was, according to Dad anyway, it's the first game I was actually able to sit through all the full 90 minutes and watch, was the 94 FA Cup final. I'd have been six at the time, so like, anything that could hold my attention for, you know, an hour and a half at that age was kind of impressive. And yeah, just kind of got the bug from then. And yeah, been a United fan ever since, really. So we didn't have Sky or satellite or anything like that until the early 2000s. So it was, again, mostly, occasionally you get a Champions League game in sort of midweek on Kunsel telly, as we'd call it, and match of the day on a Saturday night, and that was kind of my treat, was being allowed to stay up to watch that. That was kind of, yeah, late night Saturday night, getting to watch United on the telly with my dad. So that was kind of how it all started, and so I've just followed since then, and yeah, never given up on the team or the players or any of it. And the obsession runs deep, I think. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. But yeah, I suppose we're both here to talk about a player who's had a big impact on both of us, Eric Cantona. Clearly a bit of a hero to us both as well. So I suppose we'll start by sort of going through his career and yeah, kind of tell the story of his football life at least, and then maybe get into a little bit of what he's done afterwards and since then. So yeah, do you want to kind of talk us through the French section of that?
So as you know, he was from Marseille originally. He finished his formation in Auxerre. That's where a very astute French coach named Giroud, he was a very famous for, how to say it, he came from a peasant environment. He has a peasant, terrian mentality, ground to earth, you know. Mm-hmm. And like we say in French, roublardise, kind of a cunning, kind of smart, but yeah, you know. So he's the one who saw Cantona's potential and started him, and gave him his chance, and got to manage him, manage his personality at first. Then he went to Marseille, his native city. He didn't work. He hated Bernard Tapie, the owner. He hated the atmosphere there. The fans kind of turned on him, turned against him. So he started a series of loans that gave him bad press, like he was unmanageable. He couldn't stay in one place. He couldn't link with people. He went to Bordeaux, he went to Montpellier, to Nîmes. Nîmes, it wasn't alone. Nîmes, he left for Nîmes. He got quite some medals. He won twice the championship with Marseille, but he didn't play much a part in that. And he won the French Cup with Montpellier. Montpellier is a city where I live now.
Okay, cool.
It's before being Yeah, before being champion recently, that French Cup was their only title. So, so at that time I didn't follow him closely. I just, like I said earlier, I followed his antics, but the treatment of these antics from the French media. Mm-hmm. I think soon the French media saw someone they could build controversy around and sell papers, get audience, and so I got interested in Cantona at that time, and so I never saw him play for a club. I only saw him play with friends. Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, that partnership with Papin had so much potential, and he didn't fulfill that potential. And that's very French. That's very a romantic idea. I mean, you have to realize that before 98, French football was a story of what ifs. Mm-hmm. The France in 58 with Copa, Fontaine, they finished. They wanted to the semis. I don't know if they finished third or fourth. I don't remember. But then Saint-Étienne in Europe in the 70s that could have won a cup. In France, we say they could have won if the posts were not square but rounded. Mm-hmm. And the ball at that time, the ball would have gone in against Bayern. Well, then with the France, the France of 92, the team that lost against Germany with the attack from Schumacher against Batiston, and then the team in 86 in Mexico, the team with Platini that beat Brazil. Mm-hmm. And then got eliminated. Well, that was another what if. And then the Euro 88, the Mondiale 19, when the France didn't even qualify. And when Cantona started playing before 92, they had a good team. I think that they went undefeated in the qualification group before the Euro 92. And I remember watching the Euro 92 and I was dismayed. We were on a school trip and I was with my best friend, whose name Eric. I was with my best friend watching Denmark eliminate France, and well, they went on to win the whole thing, but we couldn't believe what we were watching. And and also that team, I think we will talk about that. That team was managed by Platini. Mm-hmm. Who had, I think, a big influence on Cantona, and he was one of the few French people to understand Cantona, I think, maybe because himself was a free mind and an artist, and he was one of the few to shield him, to protect him. And then there was that tragic ending of the group qualifications for the World Cup 94, when France were in the driving seat, and they crumbled in the last two games. They lost at home versus Israel, and then the last game they lost at home versus Bulgaria, and Jean Rouillet was the manager by then. Mm-hmm. And Ginola lost the ball, infamously lost the ball around the corner kick of Bulgaria, and then Bulgaria counter-attacked and scored a striking goal. Bang, bang. And that eliminated France. So that also was Euro 92, qualification for World Cup 94. Again, what ifs? Mm-hmm. That French team was very good. That French team could have been one of the favorites, maybe, in the World Cup 94. That reflects Cantona's time with the French national team. I think it was good, but could have been greater. Mm-hmm.
I think that seems to be the impression that kind of you get all the time from reading and you know, watching the various documentaries that are out there. There's one incident with Cantona, which I think basically kind of, if it didn't spell the end of his time in France, it certainly hastened it. I think that was him throwing the ball at the referee. Was this at Nîmes, I think he was at? And he got banned for a month. And
yeah.
Yeah, in the disciplinary panel that he was at, he turned to every member of the committee and said, "You're an idiot, and you're an idiot, and you're an idiot." It kind of reminds me of that scene in Father Ted. I don't know if you've seen it, when Ted's accepting his golden cleric award, and he gives this like massive speech about kind of everybody that's wronged him, and now this brings me on to liars and. I can just like I just picture that scene in my head every time I hear that story about Cantona calling everybody an idiot, I guess that was kind of the beginning of the end.
That was the most infamous. Well, that was the last throw on the camelback. I don't remember how the expression goes, but the first big one was when he wasn't selected by the manager before Platini, was Henri Michel, and he said in an interview that he was a sac à merde, a bag of shit, and that was one of the biggest infamous moments. And then, like you said, throwing the ball at the referee and throwing his jersey and all of that, and at that time, at that moment, he decided to retire from football, to retire entirely. And Gérard Rouillet, who knew him, he was, I think, assistant from Platini. I'm not sure. I don't want to say something untrue, but yeah, he already had links to England, and he kind of helped Cantona sign for England. And I think at that time, Cantona had his mind set on retiring, and his entourage, his friends, his agent didn't want that, and saw the potential of England of Cantona succeeding in England.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Platini was involved as well. I think he was one who advised him to try England at least. I read just yesterday that originally Eric was offered to Liverpool, where eventually Houllier would go and manage. Can you imagine how bad that would have been? The world would have been completely different for all of us if that had happened. And then, he went on trial with Sheffield Wednesday. Seems really, really weird to say, like a French international, multiple medal winner, going on trial at a club who'd just been promoted into the top division.
That's why he didn't stay there, because they wanted to extend the trial, and his pride didn't accept it. He said, "But I'm full international." I think they said, would the opposite happen? If an international English player came to a club in France, would they ask for an extended trial? And so Leeds jumped in.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Leeds popped in.
Faster than United.
In January of 1992. Obviously, Eric helped them to win the last ever English Football League Division 1 title before it became the Premier League. He also scored a hat-trick in...
Right under the nose of United.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, snuck it away from United right at the death. He scored a hat-trick in the Charity Shield, I suppose the start of the following season, 92-93, which is the first hat-trick in the Charity Shield since Tommy Taylor had scored one for United in 1957. So it was another kind of accolade, another feather in the cap, but Leeds didn't start the season particularly well after that, and... in November 1992, Leeds chairman decided he was going to phone Man United's chairman, Martin Edwards, about trying to sign Dennis Irwin. Edwards was in a meeting with Alex Ferguson at the time. They were both in the room. Quite a famous story, this one. And they just flatly said, "No way, we're not selling Dennis Irwin." But United at the time were kind of looking for a striker, and so they just kind of happened to ask about Cantona, and a fee of £1 million was agreed. Leeds announced that it was actually 1.2 million, just to try and save a bit of face, as they just paid £1 million for him about 6 months before. A million was the fee, according to everyone on the United side. And the rest is kind of history, I suppose. Eric slotted straight into the team up front with Mark Hughes. Brian McClair dropped back into midfield. United went from 8th in November when Eric joined and ended up winning the first ever Premier League that season. And like I say, the impact was immediate, not just on the field, but off it as well. And a lot of the youth players at the time said what a big influence Eric was on them with his kind of the extra training that he would do, the hard work that he was putting in. You know, you've got David Beckham, Ryan Giggs, Paul Scholes, all of these guys who would go on to become legendary players in their own right, giving a lot of the credit for that to Eric. And like it seems kind of completely at odds with the reports that were coming sort of from France before that of Eric being this kind of disruptive character.
But I think at Leeds, already he was at peace. He fell in love, I think, with the English football culture, with the following from the fans, with his borderline worshipping, and the liberty that the people have there, the respect of their intimacy, of their private life, and also the banter in the dressing room, and the fact that people took him as he was, and he didn't have to justify himself. And if at times he wanted to party with the others, fine. If at times he wanted to be more aback, a bit more brooding, well, they respected that. And at United, the pinpoint was that he met the perfect father figure with Sir Alex. Mm-hmm. And Sir Alex knew how to manage him. How to manage him.
That's it, yeah. Like he definitely sort of found his home in England generally, but at United specifically, and say Ferguson really did know how to get the best out of him and kind of cut him a little bit of leeway in terms of some of the things that he would
do,
dress code and things like that. But really gave him that stability and that love, and that love I think was reciprocated as well. Like Eric definitely felt it back towards.
Because one false idea, as we said in his French period, that was that he wasn't a loyal guy. He was trading clubs every 6 months, and but no, Cantona is loyal. Cantona is loyal when you accept him, when you love him, when you respect him. He gives it back to you.
Well, that's what you just kind of touched on there before. Well, in that period from, I suppose, 1987, 88 to 92, he played for 7 clubs in 5-6 years. Like it's a lot of moving around. And then once he found that place that was home and that he could settle and he was given the things that he needed to flourish, he was there for 5 years.
Yeah, you have to understand that back then, well, maybe it was same for you in Scotland, but back then we didn't have internet, we didn't have cable TV, we didn't have streaming. So Cantona living for England, England is close to France, but it was far. It was he wasn't anymore under the scrutiny of the media, of the people. He wasn't forgotten, but he was far, and we only had glimpses of him, of his goals, and surrounded by a mystical mist of genius. And there were the ads, the ads on the telly with Nike, the famous au revoir, when he shoots through the devil. And also in something that I think participated in deconstructing the marginalization he had in France was that in France we had a program in the evening with Muppets who were commenting on the actuality, Les Guignols de l'Info. It was a humoristic program, and they made a puppet of Cantona, in marionette, the Cantona, and it was very funny. It was they painted, well, as a painter, as an artist, throwing away his paintings, throwing away his jersey, saying cryptic shit, and it was, I think, that participated in people, kind of liking him, and then also we have to say he was a pundit for the 94 World Cup.
Okay,
for the French TV. He was a pundit, and he was very funny. I remember. He was paired with a journalist who's more flamboyant, more poetic, bursting into poetic shit. And he was turning to Cantona, and Cantona was cryptic. The pair was very funny. Cantona was very funny.
Oh, excellent. So, yeah, kind of did a lot to not necessarily repair his reputation, but maybe change how he was seen.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So, yeah, coming back to sort of where we were at in his career, he won the league in that first season at United, the first Premier League. The next season, they went and went one better and won the league and cup double for the first time for United.
Yeah.
Obviously, that FA Cup final in 94, as we've already mentioned, was the first game I ever watched, watched all of. And United won 4-0, obviously. The first two goals from...
Against Chelsea.
Chelsea, yep. The first two goals from Eric, both penalties.
From Cantona. Yep.
And, Mark Hughes and Ryan McClair getting the other two. It's amazing that a game that finishes 4-0 is still 0-0 after an hour. But then, Eric scored that first penalty, and then the resistance broke.
The good times when we had penalties. I can't imagine nowadays United getting two penalties in the one game.
It's impossible to imagine.
Times
now,
have changed.
So that was 94, and the 94-95 season started pretty well as well. United, so facing challenge from Aston Villa, from Blackburn in the league, but again, certainly in the running for a third title in a row until the 25th of January, 1995. Richard Shaw is the Crystal Palace defender who'd basically been glued to Eric all game, kicking lumps out of him. Eventually, there was a reaction to yet another niggly foul. Eric kicked out at Shaw. Referee sees it. Red card. As Eric is walking down the sideline towards the tunnel, a Palace, I'm loath to call him a fan, let's call it as it is, a thug, Matthew Simmons, came running down from about 12 rows down the stand to the fence at the side of the pitch, and he's screaming abuse at Cantona, and Eric just loses it. Launches himself into the famous Kung Fu kick, as it's called. There might have been fists thrown as well, depending on some of the pictures and things that you see, before he was eventually dragged away by Peter Schmeichel and others. This led to an assault charge in the courts in England. Eric was given a 2-week prison sentence originally, which was reduced on appeal to 120 hours of community service. He was also given an 8-month ban from football. Obviously, this led to him being stripped of the French captaincy of the national team, among a whole host of other things. What was the reaction to this in France at the time?
Oh, the media had a fest. They could dine on. We in French we have an expression, la curée. I don't know how that translates in English. It's a hunting term. It's when the dogs feast on the carcass, mm-hmm. and when they have hunted the animal and they all jump and eat on it. And I think that was what happened because. I think that's maybe personal hypothesis, but I think that the French media didn't sit very well with the idea that Cantona was succeeding in England, because maybe that was showing that Cantona wasn't the problem, but France or the French media was the problem. Mm-hmm. And maybe Cantona exploding like that and being... having antics in England as he had in France, maybe that comforted the French media into the idea that finally, England couldn't neither manage Cantona. Mm-hmm. And the reaction was terrible. There was a famous paper, a famous tag on the paper that said indefendable, undefendable. Mm-hmm. And prompted Cantona a few years later, in a famous TV clip, if you can find him, French TV. He met with the journalist that wrote that that headline, and he said to them, "Je vous pisse au cul," I piss in your arse.
Yeah. Okay.
And the journalists were totally bemused, and they were afraid. You can see in their eyes they are afraid that he can be violent physically. So yeah, at that time the media were horrible towards Cantona, but also, as you said, the French authorities, French football authorities, president of the French Federation, he reacted very quickly and said that it was unacceptable. Well, the what didn't sit well with Cantona, I think, was the how rapidly he judged Cantona and condemned him. And then, as you said, he was stripped from the captaincy from Aimé Jacquet, his coach at Montpellier. And you said the prison sentence was changed into hours, mm-hmm. of 120 hours of work, community work. And there's a legend in France that his first manager at Auxerre, Giroud, the one I was talking mm-hmm. before, he had relations, and he called through a relation. Well, he asked through a relation to the French president if he could do something, and well, legend says that that's the phone call from the French president that changed the prison sentence into community service.
Uh-huh.
Well, and then so he was suspended for a lot of time, and so that's around the time he shot his first movie, his first acting experience, mm-hmm. and that movie was shot where I was living.
Okay, cool.
I was living in a region, Le Gers. It's a region where there are fields, there are ducks. It's where they made the foie gras. You see, it's also a peasant mm-hmm. region, and the movie was called Le Bonheur est dans le pré. Can translate to the happiness is into the field. The happiness is in the field. It's a movie about that region, and he played a rugby player. And I met him. So one day I was at noon. I was going. I was leaving school, and I saw him standing alone in front of the city hall. And I went to him with a piece of paper and a pen so he could give me an autograph. And I was too shy and too intimidated to impress to talk to him. So he signed my autograph and I left without saying a word.
Yeah. That's still cool, though. It's still cool that you actually got to meet him and at least have an interaction from him to you, if not the other way around. No, it's funny, and he's a big man as well. Like, he's what, 6'2". He's, you know, he's not a small guy, and he's well built. And as a younger person, you would be kind of scared of that.
Impressed, yeah. And that physical part, that's one of the things I think that made him succeed in England, because he could respond to the fight, he could impose himself versus defenders, and he had the skill, he had the technicality, of course, he had the talent, but he also had the physical. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had the right blend of, I suppose, of the technical talent and the physical presence to go toe to toe with physical English defenders, and to even sometimes went too far with it. If you look at his kind of his yellow and red cards tally. He picked up quite a few. But I suppose it was a different game then.
Yeah, towards that, just towards that. Yeah, as you said about the yellow cards, and I think that maybe, well, Sir Alex knew how to take him, how to manage him, but I think maybe he was too lenient towards that. And I think that season that tainted the whole squad. I think there were many cards, many yellow cards and some red cards towards others. And maybe the team was turning into a bit of, not violence, but maybe the Sir Alex mismanaged the aggressivity, the aggression from the team in that season.
Impossible.
And that culminated into Selhurst Park.
Yeah, yeah, possibly. I mean, you've got players like Roy Keane, like Paul Ince, like Mark Hughes, Bruce and Pallister, Schmeichel. Like, they're all big physical characters. They, none of them would back down from any confrontation. And as I say, a lot of the time, that some of them probably did cross that line too often. And it did end up, obviously, it ended up costing United the league that season in the end, in typically heartbreaking fashion, losing basically on goal difference
one
in
point.
The end.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, is not a coincidence, I don't think.
No, of course.
And yeah, I suppose during this time, Cantona again has said that he wanted to retire again. Eventually, he was talked around by Ferguson and others, presumably the same bunch who kind of directed him towards England in the first place. During that community service,
he was also close to join Inter. Mm-hmm. I think Inter wanted him. Moratti wanted him from a long time.
So yeah, during that community service, he was coaching kids in Manchester, in some of the more deprived areas of the cities, and I think he kind of refound a bit of the love of the game and why he played in the first place, and just the pressure free just enjoying football and seeing the joy that it brought to these kids as well. I think that kind of reignited something back in him again, I think.
Yeah, totally. I will dwell on that later when we talk about his personality and his legacy, but yeah, I think that was a very important moment of his career. The how he interacted with those kids and how Sir Alex defended him.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, I watched the United Way documentary not long ago, and I see Eric talks about this incident, and I was really, really struck by him full on admitting that he wishes he'd actually kicked the guy harder, because, you know, the press and the legal system were always going to make an example of him anyway. He was always going to get a long ban. It's 8 months it ended up being. This was kind of like, he sort of thought, well, he might as well have made it worth it and done a bit more damage to the guy. Interestingly, Matthew Simmons, the fan that he kicked, ended up in prison himself over the incident. So he was brought into the courts on a charge of abusive behaviour. He was initially given a £500 fine for his role in, I suppose, sparking off the whole thing. But he reacted badly to that by grabbing the lawyer and punching them. And so, ended up with a week in prison as a result. So, yeah, you can kind of see, I mean, don't condone kicking fans, obviously, but you can kind of maybe understand why you'd, this wasn't a particularly nice guy.
I think that played a part in not demonizing Cantona, because he happened to kick that mm-hmm. guy, who basically was a hooligan. And I have no empathy towards him, but I think he really paid the price, because after that, I think he lost his job, he lost his friends, he got pretty alone. Well, he had hard times after mm-hmm. that for many years. But Cantona kicking a hooligan, well, that didn't excuse him, but that kind of, I think people can reflect on that, can identify to that. And if something like that happens to you, of course, it's not right. Of course, it shouldn't happen. But Well, Cantona never explained why he did that. He said that being insulted happened nearly every game, mm-hmm. and he doesn't know why that game he snapped and he did that. And he, as you said, he could have done more. He said that if there hadn't been a barrier, he would have gone with his fists. Mm-hmm. And because of the barrier, well, he had to jump and to make that kick. But I think he still has pride. I think he doesn't show it because it's not accepted, but it's not a good example, of course, kicking someone like that. But I think he has pride in what he did, and I think he would have done it again if the situation would have happened again.
Mm-hmm. And one of the most infamous Cantona moments out of this whole situation came during the press conference after the verdict was written, and we got probably the best press conference I've ever seen. It's up there. Cantona, Ferguson and the press officer come in, they sit down, and Eric says the famous, "When the seagulls follow the trawler, it is because they expect sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you." And he gets up and walks off. Like, that's it. And that is perfect. Because everybody was just left so confused by what had just happened, and yet it's quite a simple metaphor, but nobody expects a footballer to speak in metaphors anyway, and so they were just completely flummoxed by the whole thing. It was genius.
Yeah, because he says that he didn't prepare it, and it was right on the spot, and he said that it doesn't mean anything. But of course, we can all read a metaphor into that. And as you say, it's genius because doing so, he diffused the situation, and he created another situation, but a situation around his creativity, his personality, and not his aggressivity. And I think he managed to diffuse the attention from the media, still towards him, but towards an artistic part of his personality.
That's it. Yeah, it's complete deflection away from this violence, and then it's suddenly talking about this, you know, this Frenchman who's just a bit different and maybe a little bit mad, but not in a violent way. I think it was, yeah, like it's perfect, and like the metaphor works so well. You know, the journalists follow the story or follow the character because they're going to get a story. Like it's really quite simple, but it just worked so well in the moment.
Yeah, it's another way to. Yeah, it's like I was saying with the French treatment of that affair, the la curie, that hunting term. It's the same thing. It's a beast feeding upon the victim.
That's it, and yeah, it completely kind of changed the whole narrative around not just the incident, the situation, but about Eric himself, as you said. So yeah, genius. After the 8 months ban has elapsed, 1st of October 1995, Eric makes his comeback. The season for United hadn't gotten off to a great start. This was the infamous "you can't win anything with kids" season, the Alan Hansen quote. Mm. And the match, of course, was against Liverpool at Old Trafford. There was a huge buzz around the place. Obviously, Eric was coming back. There were thousands of tricolour flags that had been produced with Eric's face on them. And yeah, just this real atmosphere about it. Fergie said in the press conference, yes, Eric is back and he's going straight in from the start. Like, there's no way he's staying on the bench for this one. He's straight back in the team. See, he assisted Nicky Butt for the opening goal of the game before Robbie Fowler equalised and then put Liverpool 2-1 ahead. And then, shock of all shocks, United get a penalty. And who steps up? Eric Cantona. Collar up, chest out, sends the goalie the wrong way. 2-2. Celebrates by doing that little spin around the pole at the back of the net. And, yeah, equalises, saves the game for United and transforms the season. Like, was there much of a reaction to that? There must have been something in France and in the media.
Well, what I remember, it's just the support and the adoration from the fans, from the English fans, the loyalty they showed towards him. And you are Scottish, I'm French. We can say that there is some history between England and our countries. Mm-hmm. And having set of England's fans, but a set of England people waving French flags and singing La Marseillaise, I mean, that's maybe one of Cantona's most impressive feat. Yeah.
Who knew he was a diplomat? And yeah, so this said breathe new life into the team, inspired the kids that we've mentioned. Eventually, they go on to win the league, overhauling Newcastle's 12-point lead that they had over United during the season. Came down to a little bit of final day drama. United needed to win against Middlesbrough away. Ended up winning the game 3-0. Goals from David May, Andy Cole, who scored with his first touch, having been signed just 2 weeks before Eric was banned. So a lot of I suppose the shoulders, the weight of the expectation really piled up on him very, very quickly after Eric was suspended. And then obviously Ryan Giggs got the third one to seal the deal, and United lifted another trophy. So yeah, not only did United win the league in Eric's comeback season, but again they did the double, winning the FA Cup as well. United facing Liverpool in the famous final at Wembley, and once again it was Eric who had the decisive moment in that match, volleying home the winner from 18 yards after David James flapped at David Beckham's corner, and Eric stuck the ball away in the last minute to win it, and cue mad scenes of jubilation as I was bouncing around my living room. So yeah, pretty successful, pretty transformative for United's fortunes, I would have said.
Yeah, what a comeback. What a story, of course.
Like, if it was a movie, you'd say it was too far-fetched, but it happened. It genuinely was real life.
Well, but it really showed how he was the catalyst of that team. He arrived in 93 into a team that had good players, but who were close to winning, but didn't win, and he transformed that team. And as you said, during his absence, Sir Alex started the class of 92, and you never win anything with the kids. And in that second part of his United career, he was a role model for them. He showed through his dedication, his professionalism, his work rate, always staying longer in the training sessions and setting examples. He lifted them, I think.
Oh, definitely, definitely. He was like the real inspiration to everyone around him, not just the kids and the young players, but kind of the older, more experienced heads as well. And he was able to kind of, I think, push them all to get over the line as they hadn't been able to do the year before and in the years before he joined as well.
Yeah, yeah, because they were hard men, as you said. Hughes, Ince, Walkin when he joined. I mean, you had to be someone to inspire them and lift them. Not just the class of 92 after, but also that first generation he met at the club.
No, definitely. The following season, 96-97, Eric was named United's captain after Steve Bruce had moved on. For a couple of highlights from that season, obviously there was the iconic chipped goal and celebration against Sunderland, the one that everybody remembers and everybody would copy on the playground and kind of in games that we were playing at the time, like everybody just the big standstill, chest out, slowly spin around. And then, yeah, obviously United won the league again, all but secured a win against Liverpool when Gary Pallister scored a couple of goals. And, yeah, the deal was sealed nice and early with three games to spare that year. Meant United won four titles in 5 years, and no coincidence, the only one they didn't was when Eric was banned for the second half of the season.
Yeah,
it just goes to show what an influence he was to that squad, as we've said. And then at the end of that season, came the announcement that certainly shocked me, shocked most of the world, I think. Eric suddenly announced his retirement at the age of 30. It was kind of reported everywhere around the globe. And yeah, it was a real, real shock.
Totally, totally. But in retrospective, when you analyze him, it's not surprising, given his personality, the way he is. But yeah, at the time, it was a complete shock. Nobody could understand at that time. It was total bewilderment. But I think he had tired with the game. And as you said, when after the Kung Fu kick, he was stripped of France captaincy and he didn't play again. He wasn't called again with France. And I think missing on the Euro 92 and then the World Cup 98, when he didn't know at that time that France won the World Cup. And I think that took a toll on him. He was very disappointed. And that plus, I think, the fact that United was the dominant team in England but struggled in Europe, I think that, he threw the towel.
Yeah, he has since said that if he'd been involved with the national team setup, he would have stayed and continued until at least after the World Cup in 98 and then retired after that. It's maybe easy to say in hindsight when France have gone on to win the thing, and that would have been a real high point, and it would be, I think, quite typical of Eric to go out at the top and to want to go out at the top, surely he would have been in that squad ahead of, no disrespect, but Stéphane Guivarch or Christophe Dugarry or one of them. Like, he's more talented than either of those players.
Yeah, and Guivarch didn't even score in that World Cup. Like Giroud in 2018, they didn't score, and yet they participated. Well, Guivarch, he wasn't as talented as Cantona. But maybe with Cantona, it wouldn't have happened also, because Aimé Jacquet, the French manager, he kind of liked Cantona. Cantona was his captain at first, and he knew him from Montpellier. But I think Aimé Jacquet couldn't see how Cantona and Zidane could work in the same team. So, it's hard to say, because of course it would have been great if Cantona could have been a world champion, but I think it was a blessing in disguise for the French national team, because Zidane had the room to play, and we can say for sure that without Zidane, France wouldn't have been world champion in 98. We can imagine that with Cantona they would also have been world champion, maybe, but without Zidane, France wouldn't have been world champions.
That's true. And yeah, there's always two sides to every coin, isn't there? So yeah, that was that from Eric, at least on the football side. Obviously, we've seen and heard plenty from him since then. We've already mentioned he made his first film while he was suspended, but that was something he really leaned into after he retired. Lots of roles in various different things. He had a role in Elizabeth, the Cate Blanchett film, Looking for Eric, which he helped direct and produce as well, which I absolutely love. It's quite cheesy, but it's a lovely film. He's done stage acting, I think quite a few things on say French TV and film. I think he's got a couple out just now, doesn't he? AKA and Le Colosse and things like that. Have you seen either of those, by the way?
Well, I have to admit, I don't think he's that good an actor. I think he doesn't really act. I feel that he's always playing Cantona in different situations with different clothes, but he's a character bigger than life, and he plays his own character. I think a parallel could be Zlatan. I think Zlatan also plays a character, and Zlatan could turn into an actor and still play his Zlatan persona. So, I'm not a very big fan of Cantona as an actor, but of course I've seen some movies. But as you say, now he's more doing more like mm-hmm. TV movies, not cinema movies. So he's done quite a lot over the last few years, but I don't watch
them. No, I don't think anybody would disagree when you say he's not a great actor. In the traditional sense, at least, he does seem to, from what I've seen anyway, he does seem to, like, it's always the same. He's playing himself, basically.
But in Aka, in the movie that's on Netflix right now, when he plays a mafioso, I think it's pretty good. I think maybe with age, like wine, he's getting better, finer. And he was kind of good in that
movie. I've not seen it, so I'll see if I can get it on Netflix over here. I don't know if it is, but
watch it.
It's got to be done. Over here is kind of, it's probably more well known for some of the adverts that he's done. So obviously the Nike one back in the day, that we've spoken about. He did a series for Kronenbourg beer, saying like how the, you know, the hop farmers in the Alsace are sort of treated in the same way as you know, footballers in Britain, and like these, you know, celebrity farmers driving around on tractors and like just really silly fun stuff. And that's I think kind of how his acting career is sort of seen over here. Like, it's a bit silly, but he makes it work. So see, there was, away from acting, there was like the beach football stuff. I ended up winning the Euros and the World Championships with France as player manager. A wonderfully serious tournament. He's done some modelling. Like, and he's got this charisma that he can just get up and do these things. And you know, it's just, it's Cantona. It's fine. Anybody else did it, they'd be ridiculed, but not Eric.
Absolutely. Well, bottom line, he's an artist. He's an artist, and I think he back then he was an artist on the pitch. Footballing was the way to express his art, and then he touched various domains and like cinema after sports, like painting. He was a painter back then. Now I think he wants to do music, to learn music. Well, he needs to constantly change and not stall. He has an unresting need to prove himself in various domains. I think to the point where he takes risks and he's risking self-sabotage sometimes and maybe trying to see if he can survive it, mm-hmm. if he can go through it. He's testing himself.
But I think he's reached a level kind of in and of himself where he can take these risks, and like they're not necessarily, in some regards, they're not really that risky because he has so many other things that he can kind of turn to and do, and he's always got to be like pushing and extending himself, but there's always something else kind of underneath that he's not going to completely ruin himself.
Yeah, totally, totally. No, because with the help of experience and the passing of years, and he has more confidence, I think, more experience. But yeah, but as a player, mm-hmm. he took risks.
Definitely. Yeah. I suppose we can kind of get on to his legacy, seeing as we're kind of going in that direction anyway. Obviously, he had a profound impact on the players and people around Manchester United. Plenty of folk have gone on the record and said as much. He was a real influence there on and off the field. But obviously, he's had a profound impact on fans as well. I think both of us, for starters, and plenty of others around the world. But kind of when you say the words Eric Cantona, what does that mean to you?
The puff chest and the collar up and the head high. I mean, Cantona has had confidence and showed confidence, because I think that deep down, maybe he doesn't have that much confidence. Maybe that was why he needed to test himself and why he needed so much father love and from his managers. But Cantona is the embodiment of you go out there and you show what you're made of. And he has his own man. He has his own logic, his freedom, and he has the balls to do what he wants, what he deems fit to do. And also, he's cryptic. He's a mystery. As we said, he was an artist, but a misunderstood one. And some people can't understand art, beauty, originality. And that's maybe why some media wanted to taint him, to destroy that, to lower to their levels. But at least in France. But and why another artist like Platini understood him and defended him in France. But in everything he does, he's an artist. He does in his own thing, and in football or in acting. And he needs to create to prove himself. He has his own perspective on things, his own look, his own voice. That can be inspiring for other people, for young players or for fans. But as we said, it can be misunderstood. For example, you mentioned looking for Eric. When that title is not his own, but that title is cryptic in his own, because you can understand trying to understand Eric, but also trying to find inspiration. But so in that movie, he doesn't act. He mm-hmm. really plays himself that time. He has freedom to be himself as the icon he was. But when he says that famous line, "I'm not a man, I am Cantona," it can be misunderstood. It can be understood like, I'm not just a man, I'm more than a man. And like he's taking himself more seriously than he should. But I think what he's trying to say is that I'm not just any man, I'm just myself. And any man is his own, any man is different, original, and he doesn't mm-hmm. mean he's above others. It just means that he has his own originality.
No, I definitely have got to try and follow that now. that was perfect. No, I agree. Like, he's the ultimate individual, in that he at least embodies this like unbreakable self-confidence, and as you've said, he backs himself in whatever he does. He always has to push boundaries and yeah, create things, and whichever facet that may be. Like, for me as a kid, he was my first hero, I suppose. Certainly first yeah. footballing hero, anyway. Like, I remember I was, yeah, must have been 6-7 years old, and I didn't have a United shirt, but I had a t-shirt that somebody had got for me, and it was Eric Cantona that was on the t-shirt, and I wore that thing until it fell apart. I just loved this like this character. He was, you know, larger than life. He was like, clearly he was the best player on the pitch, and it didn't seem to matter kind of what else was going on in the game. Eric was always going to do something, and something that would, you know, inspire you to go and copy it out in the garden, you know, spend the rest of the day doing
yeah, that's
trying
it.
to trying to replicate that. And like, so from that perspective, I absolutely adored him. And then as I've gotten older and I've gotten to appreciate his character more, and every genius is flawed in some way, and you know, Eric certainly has plenty of those flaws, but he also has that genius in him, and he has to constantly be doing something and yeah, pushing himself to achieve everything that he can in whatever it is that he wants to do. And I think that's the thing. He's a winner, and a creative winner.
Yeah. You, of course, you, as a fan, you admire him for the goals, the assists, but also the personality, all that you described. And he was inspiring despite all his flaws. He was inspiring that you can fail, but then you just get up with the chest puffed and the head high and the collar up, and you move on. And that's why he was a catalyst for the United team, but also why he was so much worshipped from the fans. And he also embodied freedom. Freedom, because he's a free man, he's a man of his own, but also freedom to express himself, freedom to do things on the pitch or in front of a camera. And I think freedom is one of the most important things for Cantona. He suffers from lack of freedom, I think, and lack of respect and injustice, and not being recognized for what he is. And he got all those things in at United, with the fans, with teammates, with Sir Alex, in England and at United. He was accepted, respected, and loved for what he is. When in France, he was misjudged, misunderstood, rejected. He was cast out. And also that freedom and the fact that I think he's an artist. I think deep down, it's related to the fact that he was, maybe not now, but at the time, he was still a child, I think. That's why he needed a father figure like Sir Alex, and why, as we said, the community service with working with child was so important with him. Because I think he always kept the inner child in him, at least until the Kung Fu Kick, where after that he maybe was more mature. But he often reacted as a petulant child towards authority, and he just wanted to play and get recognition in the other eyes. All that, all some characteristics that children have, and that's why he was sometimes so difficult to manage, and that's the genius of Sir Alex to having understood that and managed that.
Yeah, I like that. Like, it does seem like he was constantly searching for that validation, like a child does. Like, you always do something and you want the praise for doing something well, and don't
Totally.
necessarily want the punishment when you've done something wrong. And I think, yeah, you've touched on it a few times now, but Ferguson really understood that and was able to validate when he needed to. I think probably was able to subdue some of that tempestuousness as well, a little bit, maybe not as much as he perhaps should have done, but enough to kind of get the best out of Eric. And again, you touched on him being an inspiration despite his flaws, and I think that part of why he was so inspiring is because he did have these flaws, and he was human like all the rest of us are.
He's human, absolutely. He's just human, and that's what he's trying to say when he's I'm Cantona. He's human, and that's totally.
And I think that's how he was able to reach so many people and to touch so many lives and give joy to so many people, because you could always see a bit of the everyman in Cantona, a bit of everyone. Like, it's very, very relatable, I think, in lots of ways, even despite the artistry and the poetic nature. And I like that he kind of, in a way, maybe he was ahead of his time, in that, you know, you could never accuse Eric Cantona of not being masculine, and yet he was into art, he was into poetry, he was into these things that people certainly in the 90s wouldn't have considered, you know, masculine hobbies. And yet he played football and wasn't afraid to get stuck in and could be that physical. And it's this kind of duality of person and of masculinity that I think is certainly ahead of its time.
Totally. And he owned his flaws. That's also something that's very well. Also, well, he owned his flaws, and as we said, he was very human in the in the way that I think that deep down, with that child idea, he didn't have that much confidence, but he fought through that, and to the outside world, he tried to show confidence, and that's a very, I think we can all relate to that. We can all have moments of self-doubt, of low confidence, of succumbing to our flaws, and yet we try to face the world, and we try to show what we are, and to own what we are. That's very inspiring.
No, definitely. And like, how would you say Eric is sort of, I say, remembered, because he's still here, but how is he thought of in France? What's his reputation now?
I don't know. I don't think he's taken too seriously. He wasn't as a player. There was quite some hatred towards him. And now, as an artist, I don't think he's taken too seriously in France. And I have to say, I'm going to add something as a United fan, and a French United fan. It wasn't easy growing up in France, because French media disliked Cantona, and when Wenger joined Arsenal and brought the Frenchies, Petit, Vieira, Pires, Henry, the French media leaned toward Arsenal and backed Arsenal and were pretty much in favor of Arsenal, and so hence they hated Arsenal rivals, United. So I feel that all that's United related is not very popular in France, and as the common sentence is, Sarex ruined so many childhoods. Well, there's something like that in France. That's why, for me, I know that our biggest rivals are City, Liverpool, Leeds, but for me, as a French guy, my fiercest rival and the game I always watch first in the calendar is Arsenal. And that's why I'm so happy they blew it this season. Yes!
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's... And like, that was sort of the defining rivalry of maybe not our childhood, but certainly, through our teenage years and things like that. Like, that was the pinnacle of... Yeah, the most probably intense rivalry, I think, that United have had.
Yeah. Keane versus Vieira, that was something. Keane versus Brilliant. Vieira, that was legendary.
Yeah, no, that was special times, and the fact that we got the better of them most of the time is just all the sweeter. Most of the time. Yeah, I think to kind of sort of start to wrap things up, I think to kind of discuss Eric as a as a united hero and his legacy there. I think certainly from a fan's perspective, he's still held in incredibly high regard. Obviously, he's a legend of the club. He always will be. But the fact that, you know, fans will still sing his songs and his chants in the ground today, like that tells you something. There's not too many who get that after they've left, and never mind 26 years after they retire.
Yeah. You know, I was impressed. My first United game, the first United game I attended was in Europe. I've been to a dozen of United games in Europe, and 3 weeks ago, I finally attended my first game at Old Trafford against Villa. But the first United game I attended was in Paris, in Stade de France. It was against Lille. Lille had a stadium too small to host the game, so it was hosted in Stade de France. And so I got out from the metro going to the stadium, and I was submerged by a wall of United fans singing Cantona, and I was
that goes to show what an impact he had. That, like, yeah, when United fans think of France, they think of Eric. When they go to France, they sing about Eric, and like it still happens in Old Trafford. I mean, you always kind of listen as soon as sort of the end of November, December comes around, you start singing Five Cantonas, and it's great. And like I said, it just shows like how fondly he's remembered by fans and how highly regarded he is.
Yeah, he was voted the best player of the Premier League by United fans. Best player, when you watch all the quality players we had over the years, he's a legend. He's a legendary status. Yeah, to be named a king when there already was a king.
Yeah.
You Scots know it. Yeah, there already was a king with Dennis Law, and to be also named a king, it means something.
That's it, yeah, to be put on that equal level with, again, another one of the all-time legends, and that there's only one king. We've got two.
Because I think deep down, I think, we said the impact he had on us fans and on the young players and on the non-young players, on the other players. But deep down, what happened with him is that, bottom line, he broke United back. Mm-hmm. United back on the map and to greatness. Of course, it's Sir Alex who won all the titles, but surely he wouldn't have won so many titles if Cantona hadn't signed for Manchester United. Simple as that.
That's it. Like, yeah, United were a good team, as you said, but they never quite got there. And it was only after Eric came in and lifted everybody and won the first league title in 27 years. And that was...
He brought United back on the map.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. Brought us back to the top of the table again for the first time, and it took an awful long time for us to get there, and we stayed there for a very long time, and so yeah, fallen away a little bit, and yeah, we need another Eric.
Well, I think that of course, in the last 2 or 3 years, we still haven't get to the top, but I think that Bruno had a similar catalyst impact. Well, not similar because we're not winning titles yet, but he had definitely a catalyst impact. When Bruno arrived, he changed the attitude, he changed the work rate, and he brought that creativity and that role modeling to the team. So it's too early to compare Bruno to Cantona. Of course, I hope we will be able to do that if we win a few titles with Bruno, but I think he had a similar impact as a catalyst.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, and that's probably the closest comparison we can really draw, at least as far as we can at the moment. And as you say, hopefully, yeah, Bruno can continue to inspire and say lift the team to more trophies and more titles and hopefully the league in the not too distant future.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's probably a good place to kind of draw things to a close. I've kept you here for probably long enough.
Absolutely.
So yeah, thank you, Andre, for coming on and being part of this this first proper episode of the Retro Devils podcast. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Before you go, yeah. Is there anything?
Thank you. I want to thank you. I want to thank you because I was pretty stressed because English is not my native language, and I was pretty stressed because I didn't know if what I was going to say was interesting enough. But yeah, it was very pleasing, and I really thank you for that moment and for the opportunity to chat with you. It was great.
No, but thank you. And honestly, your English is probably better than mine, so certainly don't have anything to worry about there. But yeah, before you go, is there anything you want to kind of shout out or plug, or let people know where they can follow you online and things like that?
I'm on Twitter. I've been on Twitter for little more than 2 years, and because I'm following United from afar can be a lonely experience, and I wanted to find a community to share that experience, to talk about games and talk about the club that's so important in our lives. So yeah, I'm on Twitter at Eric Cantona, but with only one C. It's neater. And
perfect. Well, I think we'll wrap up there, and we'll let you get away. But thank you very much for all of your input and all your contributions. It's been really interesting getting a French perspective on all of this as well. I think that's going to bring a lot of interest for a lot of people. So thank you for that. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Retro Devils, the Man United History Podcast. If you'd like to follow either of us on Twitter, you can do. Andre is at _ Eric Cantona _. That's Eric Cantona, all one word, with just one C in the middle. And you can follow me at Sheltie Devil. That's Sheltie Devil. If you want to support the show, you can do. The best place to do that is patreon.com/retrodevils. It costs from just £1 a month, and it really helps to cover the server costs and running costs of the podcast. Of course, you can also leave a review wherever you listen to this. It probably won't really do that much, but it may help us to get bigger guests onto the show in the future, and it might also make us feel good inside as well. Thank you for listening. I think we'll leave the final words of this episode to the man himself, the icon, the enigma, the legend.
I'm not a man. I am Cantona.